name. Amen. So today, we are in Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. The book of Mark being one of the accounts of Jesus' life and ministry while here on earth. And we're going to be kind of zooming in on a piece of a larger story. And if you would like to hear more about how does this kind of almost interlude type story fit into the larger flow of what Mark is doing in this chapter, you can come to the evening praise gathering where I'll be digging in a little bit deeper to, okay, how does this fit into the context and some interesting connections to the Good Samaritan story here. But I won't be doing that this morning. I'm going to be focusing more on the immediate passage at hand, which is Mark chapter 5, verses 24 through 34. So hear this from God. And he went with them. That's he's going with the crowd. He's going to the synagogue leader's house where that leader's daughter is ill. That's the sort of larger kind of frame story here. But we're going to be focusing in on what happens on the journey to the house. So he went with them, and a great crowd followed him, that's Jesus, and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." I enjoy rock climbing. I don't do it all the time, but I like to do it when I have a chance to. And there's one kind of rock climbing called top rope, where there's a rope at the top, hence top rope, that you're connected to. And so you end up being kind of connected to the wall in a few different ways. There's the rope that you're tied into that if you fall, it catches you, because unlike bouldering, you get up pretty high. So you want something to catch you, but it's not just the rope that's holding you there. You also have your feet that are in the footholds. You have your hands that are on the wall. So you're sort of connected to the wall, to the climbing in a few different ways. And it's not enough for my feet just to like not be broken and my hands and wrists not to be sprained and the rope not to be cut. They have to be functioning in the appropriate way to do the thing that they're supposed to do. The rope has to be tied. My hands have to be strong. My feet have to be sturdy in order to do the act of climbing. In a similar way, we are connected to this world, our existence, in a number of different ways. We're connected to God. We're in relationship with others, other people around us. We're connected to the physical creation itself. And we even have a relationship, in some sense, with ourselves, within ourselves. And again, in a similar way, it is not enough for those things just to sort of be there. But in order for flourishing, in order for goodness, in order for peace, biblical peace, they all need to be working well. The picture of peace in the Bible is all things working as they should be. We see this in the garden in the very beginning. God, when he made all things, did not give a meh, it's fine. Things are just kind of there. He wasn't cold-shouldered and distant from his creation and from his people, Adam and Eve, who he had made, but rather he called his creation good, very good. Once it was completed. And when all things were made and Adam and Eve were dwelling in the garden, he walked in the cool of the day. He was with Adam and Eve, all things functioning as they should be, flourishing, good. peace. But we experience the lack of peace. For things did not stay that way, but as Pastor Will referenced, it fell. Adam and Eve rebelled. Sin, what is wrong and evil, entered into the world. Lack of peace. Things not the way that they should be. And we experience that, not the way that it should be-ness, in all of those connections. Physical pain that persists with us and sickness. Conflict within family and friends, despite you trying to bring reconciliation and kindness, and or perhaps not even just conflict, but just a lack of any sort of positive relationship being there. Maybe you don't fight, but never spend time with each other. Or perhaps within yourself, that relationship with yourself, your own pride and fear or unlovingness, whatever sin it is that you struggle with, that relationship within yourself, your own person, is fraught and frayed and wrong. And ultimately, our relationship with God, the Father who loved us and made us, also fraught and frayed. We see in this account, this story of Jesus and the woman, we see someone whose connections to this world are frayed, are fractured, and like the woman in the story, our tethers to the world, to ourselves, to God, to others, are not the way that we should be. And so we ask the question, how does peace come? This peace that Jesus gives, go in peace and be healed of your disease. How does the peace come? So first, we see that we must see the need. We must see the need. So the account starts out by noting her condition, the woman's condition. If you would look with me in verse 25. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, who had suffered much under many physicians and spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. Mark is a dense gospel. It's the shortest of all the gospels. He's constantly moving from one thing to another. So the fact that he repeats over and over again the seriousness of what her condition is, 12 years, spent much, still hasn't fit, this is like painful, continually painful for her. And it gives the sense of she has done everything humanly possible to address this problem. Only someone who is greater than the human doctors can do anything about it. And we see that this particular ailment has affected all of those tethers, all of those connections with her own existence. First, we see her the physical relationship to her own physical body is broken, right? Her body is not functioning as it should be. She would not be able to work as she could, enjoy the world, and you know, physical creation as someone who did not deal with this would be able to. And perhaps you feel that acutely. You hear she has suffered much under many physicians. And perhaps you have a loved one who that phrase applies to, or for you personally. You spent more time in doctor's offices than you ever thought was possible. And you feel that. Physical creation, not the way that it's supposed to be. Her relationship with others would be strained. So she has a flow of a discharge of blood, which in the Jewish context, under the Jewish law given by God in the Old Testament, this would make her ritually unclean. And I'll say just a little bit more on that in a moment, but just to briefly say, if she is unclean, anything she touches is unclean, and anyone who touches what she touches would become unclean. Now, that doesn't mean that people couldn't spend time around her. They still could, either by being careful not to touch, or they could, you know, touch, and then there were rituals that you could make yourself clean again. So people could spend time with her, but it was certainly more difficult and more strain than if she did not have this discharge of blood. Now, I want to make a very brief note. A lot more could be said here, but just on the unclean, clean, and what is God doing there? Why does God give these laws about cleanness, uncleanness, and specifically in regards to our bodies? Is God just making us feel badly about our own physicalness, and why does it affect this woman in a particularly heavy way? So I'm going to step back and just say, ask the question, why was the law given to Israel? So the law in which these laws about uncleanness is a part is an act of communication from God to his people. The law is an act of communication given from God to his people. And when God communicates with his people, he is principally relating two things. And is drawing that from the Westminster Confession. What do the scriptures principally teach? Who is God and how are we to relate to him? Who is God and how are we to relate to him? And in his law, particularly in laws about cleanness and uncleanness, God is communicating, I am distinct. I am separate. The word that the Bible uses to communicate that idea is holy. I am holy, distinct, and set apart. And so we as people must relate to him in that way. So laws around what is clean and unclean primarily serve as a reminder. As a reminder that we must be morally pure. And so these things in day-to-day life about clean and unclean serve as a kind of moment-by-moment reminder of, I need to live rightly. I need to be loving and just. And he gives these day-to-day, moment-to-moment reminders to do that. Now, as another quick kind of sub-point there, unclean and clean, like someone with a discharge of blood, is not a moral category. God is not saying she is doing something wrong, morally wrong, by having a discharge of blood. Rather, the unclean and clean are just a ceremonial category, not a moral category. There's a lot more that could be said there, but just wanted to give a note on that. And if you would like to talk to me more about that, have other questions, I'm happy to talk about it afterwards. So she is experiencing this constant state of uncleanness that results in, as I said, her kind of social connection, her relationship with others being strained, but also her relationship to God being strained. If you were ceremonially unclean, you could not go into the temple. She couldn't worship as someone who didn't have this would be able to. Her relationship with God is not the way that it should be. And it seems like even her relationship to herself is not the way that it should be. We want to be careful about overly psychologizing what we see in the Bible without explicit statements about someone's inner thoughts. But it seems that she is fearful of coming before Jesus. We commonly see people coming up to Jesus asking things of him. But all she can do is reach out and touch the hem of his garment. And in Jesus' response, calling her daughter, he seems to recognize her need for recognition, that something about her self-image, the way that she views herself as not worthy of coming before Jesus, not wanting to be seen, that her relationship with herself is also hurt as a result of this infirmity. And so she sees this need. She acutely feels the need for salvation, acutely feels the need for healing and peace because she knows that she does not have it. She sees her need and is tenaciously and bravely going after restoration and peace. So she goes after Jesus because she sees her need. We have to see our own need first in order for peace to come. When I was living in Pittsburgh at one stage, when I was kind of in and out in Pittsburgh at different times, I was living in a house, and of course I had a key for the house, and the key worked, but like it didn't work perfectly. You had to like put it in and like jiggle it a little bit, and then like the door would open, and I just figured, oh, it's fine. Like it's a little bit annoying, but like it's okay. And then eventually, I guess, you know, like the teeth of the keys wore down enough that one day it's like 9 p.m., 10 p.m. I put it in and like I jiggle it a little bit and it's like, doesn't work. All right. Well, you know, what do I do now? So I go around to the front, where there are some windows. And thankfully, as I like try to push the window up, someone had forgotten to lock the windows. So I can like push the window up. But as I'm doing that, the window like falls into the house because the window isn't like secured correctly. I'm like, I just hope that nobody's seeing this right now. I'm like calling the police. It was fine. I got in. I like put the window back up. But if I just recognized like, there's a problem. And there's an easy solution. Just go and make a new key, right? It costs like $3. But I just chose to put up with the problem instead of seeking peace. And that can't a fully functioning key. I didn't seek after it. I just put up with the problem. Are you willing to see the problem? To see it for its seriousness? And like this woman, tenaciously seek after peace. Seek after restoration. So first we see the problem, and then we see that Jesus brings physical restoration with creation, physical peace. Mark says, immediately the flow of blood dried up, verse 29, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. The power of Jesus as a result of her coming in faith. Jesus has power over even disease. And in response to her coming, trusting that Jesus is who he says he is, he provides healing. Now, simply for sake of time, I'm not going to enter into the sort of conversation around what does it mean that Jesus asked who touched me and that Jesus sensed that power went out of him. I'll give a comment on that again at the evening gathering. But just for kind of, you know, focusing in, I'm just not just to say I recognize that that's there. I'm just not gonna touch on it. But he brings physical peace, physical restoration. And it's important to recognize that Jesus sees our physical problems. Sometimes I am prone to think, yeah, Jesus cares about my heart, my spiritual condition. But he doesn't really care about the pain in my back or the sickness that my mother might have, whatever it is. But he does. We see it here. He cares for her physical condition. He knows that you long for the sickness to be gone in the one that you love or in yourself, the pain to be finished. And he promises to bring physical restoration as we come in faith. But a question might linger, why do we see her receive the gift of healing, but the one that I love or myself does not? Why do I see someone else be healed and not me or the one that I pray for? And I don't have an answer to that. I don't know. I don't know why some are healed and some are not, but I do know that this healing that we see here is simply a foretaste. It's a taste of what is to come in the promised restoration. That when Jesus comes again, making all things new, he promises not just one person or however many people Jesus healed over the course of his ministry. We don't have records of them all, but he certainly healed many. Not just those 100 or 1,000, but all who have put their faith in Jesus and enter into that new heaven and new earth receive full restoration. That as, if you put your faith in Jesus, your pain has an expiration date. It will end. That's the promise. And we see that Jesus is able to do it. He has power over disease. He is able to do it. So we may continue to carry that question, but Jesus is good, and we put our trust in his promise. I have a tender spot in my heart for the C.S. Lewis series, Chronicles of Narnia, and especially the book, His Horse and His Boy. Lewis communicates this sort of like dual idea of Jesus cares, but we don't get to know everything. And part of the ending of that book. There's a character, Shasta, who has gone through a lot of different trials. A lot of bad things have happened to him as he has sought to sort of make the right decision. And over the course of the story, there have been various lions and cats who have sometimes been helpful, sometimes seem to be hurtful. And at the end of the book, he's talking to the lion. The lion, of course, consistently throughout Lewis's books, being a representation of Jesus. So I just want to read a short passage from that. And Shasta gaped with open mouth and said nothing. The voice spoke, "I was the lion who forced you to join with Erebus," another character. "I was the cat who comforted you among the houses of the dead. I was the lion who drove the jackals from you while you slept. I was the lion who gave the horses the new strength of fear for the last mile so that you could reach King Loon in time. And I was the lion you do not remember who pushed the boat in which you lay, a child near death, so that it came to shore where a man sat wakeful at midnight to receive you. Then it was you who wounded Erebus," a lion had cut another character. "So it was you who did that?" "It was I. But what for?" "Child," said the voice, "I am telling you your story, not hers. I tell no one any story but his own." We see and hear in this little bit Lewis communicating two deep truths of the Christian life. The Lord is providing for us as we live and go through all things. And yet, we don't know why some receive some things and others receive others. The Lord only tells us our own story. But we trust that he loves us, we trust that he provides, and ultimately we trust that he will bring all things into restoration and that this healing is only a foretaste of that. But our lives are more than just problems with our physical body. But Jesus does not stop there, because Jesus goes beyond just bringing physical peace, but also brings relational restoration between God, others, and ourselves. So first, as a result of bringing the physical restoration, the flow of blood is dried up. Those other problems that she experienced as a result of that discharge of blood are gone. She can go to the temple. Her social relationships are no longer strained. Restoration. Things are more towards the way that they should be. Not just a baseline, nothing, but more towards full flourishing, the way that things should be. But Jesus doesn't stop there, right? She doesn't just touch the hem of his garment. She gets healed, end of story. But we see it continue. Would you look with me in verse 30? "And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, 'Who touched my garments?'" Now, when I read this, the sort of question comes into my mind. Wouldn't it be more loving for Jesus to just sort of let her go on her way? Clearly, she doesn't want to be talked to, right? Wouldn't it be more loving for him to just let her go? Understandable question. But Jesus sees beyond what she just, might fearfully desire, but gives her what she needs out of love. He calls her out, saying, "Who touched me?" asking the rhetorical question. And he looked around, seeing who had done it, giving her an opportunity to bring herself forward. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. Fear, perhaps because of recognizing the greatness of Jesus consistently throughout the gospel. When people see what Jesus is capable of doing, they respond with trembling. But I think it is also reasonable for us to think that she might be afraid of what Jesus might say because she touched her. Will he be angry with me? Something like that. Though, again, we don't know. We don't want to read too much into someone's mind that we don't have explicit statements about what they are thinking. But how does Jesus respond to her fear? He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." Jesus searches her out and sees her. The one who would be somewhat ostracized on the peripheral of the social-ness of her family or connections. Jesus searches her out, brings her in to the center of attention. And what does he say? "Daughter." The word here is described as respectful and affectionate. And the commentator I was looking at describes the word "daughter" in this time in that way, respectful and affectionate. Jesus gives her honor and tender love when he calls her daughter in front of the whole crowd gathered there, right? This isn't isolated. It's not just him and her, but people see her and see Jesus, the powerful teacher, calling this woman daughter. By calling her out, he gives more restoration with her relationships. That she is given honor by the one who is powerful. And that, works towards restoring her relationship with herself and with others. Jesus seeking not just for physical restoration, but relational restoration with God as she is now able to enter into the temple part of religious life in the way that she should be, have relationship with others as a result of the sickness not being there, but also given this status as one who Jesus calls daughter, and with herself, that she knows Jesus saw me and called me to himself, calling me daughter. Your faith has made you well. She came in faith, seeking after Jesus, humbly knowing her need, and as a result, receiving healing. And he says, "Go in peace." Peace, again, being the divine peace, not just lack of conflict, but towards full flourishing, the way that things should be. And so we also seek after peace. Goal of flourishing, not simply lack of conflict. We see our own need, whatever it might be, whether it is physical, whether it's relational conflict that we have with others, whether it's how we view ourselves or how we view others or our relationship with God and how we are distant from him or whatever it might be. We don't just seek for, "Okay, I didn't have any fights today," but that we seek after full restoration. And it begins by seeing the need. And like the woman seeking after restoration, coming in faith to Jesus, who is able to change, who is powerful, who is good and lovely. So we seek after him, trusting that he will bring physical restoration, whether it's here in this life, or when he comes again, bringing restoration for all things, but also seeking after relational restoration here as we come before him, humbly seeing our own sin and seeking after peace as Jesus promises to give it. Would you pray with me? Lord, thank you. Thank you that you use your power and your goodness for healing, that you use it to love us as we need to be loved, like this woman in this account. Lord, I pray that we would grow in ability to trust in you and seek after the healing and the peace that we need. I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.